The Soul Thief. A Short Story of the Paranormal. By Alan McCarville. Copyright 2020 Alan McCarville. Prologue. The evil awoke. It hungered. The souls it held captive no longer sustained it. It was time to feed. It had been a long time since it last ate, and it needed nourishment. It needed the life force of a human. Section 1. Alex was standing in a graveyard. Wandering through a cemetery was definitely not how he had intended to spend his afternoon on this rainy Saturday. It had been raining on and off since early morning, a light wind pushing thin curtains of mist across the bay, and the grass underfoot was sodden, soaking through his sneakers. As always, the salt-laden scent of the sea was in the air, but having lived next to the sea all his life, 16-year-old Alex Benning didn't notice. It was one of those things you became accustomed to. He was totally pissed, and it had nothing to do with the weather. His current state of affairs was the fault of his little brother, Danny. He had planned to hang out with Joey and Sarah at the village community center, but that little weasel Danny had ruined that plan. Danny was supposed to be on a Cub Scout hike, but the inclement weather had resulted in the hike being cancelled. Their parents had to go out for a few hours, so guess what? He had been voluntold to babysit his 10-year-old brother. Usually, the babysitting chore would degenerate into chaos within minutes after their parents' departure. Danny felt he was too old to need a babysitter and would not listen to Alex. That inevitably would lead to a shouting match between the boys, which Alex would win because he could yell louder, was over a foot taller, and 60 pounds heavier than his brother. On this particular Saturday morning, a short time after their parents had left, both boys had ended up in the family room. Alex was using the computer for a school research project, while Danny was using the Xbox game controller to play video games on the large, flat-screen TV. "Danny! Turn down the volume," snapped Alex. "Can't you see I'm working?" "Why don't you use the computer in the library?" retorted the younger boy in a surly tone. That, of course, was a perfectly reasonable suggestion, but Alex was expecting obedience, not logic, from the 10-year-old. "I said turn it down," shouted Alex. True to form, Danny grinned mischievously and instead increased the volume. At that, Alex sprang from the chair and grabbed for the controller, which his little brother clutched even more tightly, holding on with both hands and pulling it into his chest. Alex literally lifted his brother off his feet, yanking the device with all his might. The controller sprung free, not only from Danny's hands, but from Alex's as well, and went flying. It hit a table lamp before ricocheting into the computer modem, knocking it onto the floor. Both boys held their breath, watching the lamp as it tottered like a drunken sailor, before finally falling to the floor and shattering. "Now you've done it," hissed Alex, looking in dismay at the fragmented lamp. Then he noticed that the modem also appeared to be broken. That meant there was no internet. He glared at the younger boy, "You are so dead." The only thing that prevented Alex from thumping his brother then and there was the sudden return of their parents. "What the hell is going on here?" demanded Elliot Benning. Danny quickly scampered behind his father for protection and pointed at his older brother. "It's all his fault," he declared emphatically. Alex scowled at Danny. "It's his fault, Dad. I was trying to work on my assignment and the maggot wouldn't turn down the volume." "I've told you before, don't call your brother names," scolded his exasperated father. At that point, Miriam Benning, their mother, entered the room. "Oh, no. My favorite lamp," she moaned. Yesterday she had complained that the lamp was ugly and should be replaced, but Alex didn't think it would be wise to remind her of that right now. "Sit," commanded Elliot Benning. Both boys sat at opposite ends of the long couch, as far from each other as they could get. "Okay, tell us what happened," sighed their father, although he could guess at the story. It was predictably the same. Danny had done something to irritate his older brother, who typically overreacted and things escalated. Alex was not the most patient person, especially when it came to dealing with his younger brother. Their father was only half listening as the two boys tried to incriminate each other. Finally, he held up his hand shouting, "Enough. Both of you are grounded for a week." He ignored their protests and continued, "The cost of a new lamp is coming out of your allowances." He shot Danny an angry look. "You, young man, will clean out that old shed at the back of the property and will not be going anywhere until it's done." Elliot had been planning to clean out the shed for ages but had been putting it off. There was always something else to be done. Now he would get Danny to at least start the project. Danny glanced out the window at the woods where the old shed stood, invisible through the trees and drizzle. Their property was large and had been in the family for generations. The house was a huge Victorian-style residence which the locals referred to as the mansion, and was over a century and a half old, but it was well maintained with modern conveniences. However, one could not say the same about the old shed. Danny never went near the structure. He was frightened of it, believing that something lurked within. Now he had to clean it out. He was terrified, but there was no way he was going to admit to being scared, especially in front of Alex. Their father turned his attention to Alex. "You are the oldest, Alex, and should know better." That line again, Alex groaned silently to himself. Since when is being the oldest a reason someone should be blamed for anything? Alex, however, wisely kept that thought to himself. His father pointed at the broken modem. "That cannot be replaced until Monday. When is your project due?" "I need to hand in a first draft on Monday," replied Alex glumly, realizing that the broken modem meant no internet, and no internet hindered the research he had to do. Then he had an idea. "Ah, Dad. If you drove me to the library, I could use their computer and complete the assignment." Elliot had already considered that, but there was a lesson he wanted his eldest son to learn. "What were you researching?" he asked. Basically the family tree back to the early 1800s. "I need names, dates, who was who," explained Alex. Having a father who was a history professor certainly raised his history teacher's expectations regarding the quality of homework Alex submitted. "And where else would one find that information?" asked his father. "Where do you think such information came from originally?" Alex had noted that Danny had been given an extra punishment over and above the grounding and paying for the lamp. He had to clean the shed. Their father always treated both his sons equally, so Alex knew more crap was coming his way. He shrugged uncertainly and said, "I don't know, Dad. Old records, old newspapers, tombstones." He stopped when he noticed his father grinning at the mention of tombstones. "Ah, come on, Dad. You're joking, right? I'll drive you over to the cemetery and you can spend some time recording the information on the family headstones. It'll do you good to do research the old-fashioned way." Alex groaned. The cemetery was on the outskirts of the village in which they lived. Most of their ancestors were buried there. The oldest family tombstone dated back to the 1820s. So, that was why he was here in a cemetery on a wet Saturday afternoon, recording information from headstones instead of chumming around with Joey and Sarah, suffering what he considered to be cruel and unusual punishment. That little worm Danny had much to answer for. At least his father allowed him to bring his tablet so he could take pictures of the headstones. Later, he could use a cable to download the images to the computer and then would be able to draft an outline, making use of the recorded information. He used his tablet to capture an image of each headstone and was finished in less than an hour. The process was simple: aim and shoot. He didn't pause to study any of the headstones he was photographing. He did note, however, that several of his kinfolk had died quite young, some were only 11 or 12. Like most young people, Alex gave little thought to death. Still, he felt a sense of sadness realizing some of his relatives had died young and consequently were deprived of the opportunity to pursue their dreams, to reach their potential. As he waited for his father to return, he wandered around the other headstones. He had never actually spent time at the cemetery. Hanging around graves was not high on his list of entertainment activities, but as he read the names on the tombstones, he realized there was a lot of history literally lying at his feet. In some respects, it was more real than reading the same information on the internet. Reluctantly, he had to admit that his father had made a good point. Of course, that's something he would never admit. He recognized many of the names of other families, families that had lived in the village for years, some of whom he knew well. The dearly departed members of his family were buried in one corner of the cemetery, which Alex assumed was because the Bennings had always been wealthy and leaders in the community. It was as if their stature had to be maintained, even after death. When he was finished taking the pictures, he waited at the side of the road by the entrance to the cemetery and saw his father's car approaching. He was wet and uncomfortable and almost wished he had taken his father's advice about bringing an umbrella. However, he was 16 and would not be caught dead using an umbrella. He shivered as he glanced at the tombstones. Perhaps that was not the best expression given the location, he thought gloomily. "Did you get what you needed?" asked his father as Alex climbed into the car. Alex nodded, thankful that his father had the heater going. "Yes, Dad. I'll be able to finish my draft on time." His father turned the car around, and they headed back home. Alex glanced in the side view mirror as they pulled away. There was something about the information he had seen, something that was odd, something that he could not put his finger on. He had seen something that was unusual, but he didn't know what it was. For now, though, he just wanted to get home and dried off. That little anomaly gnawing at his subconscious was not that important. Section 2. Danny stood dejectedly in the drizzle, looking down the track that led to the shed. With a sigh, he reluctantly trudged toward the dreaded shed, his rubber boots squelching in the muddy rain-soaked trail. The path was narrow and overgrown, and it curved into the woods towards the shed. He followed the path into the woods, his house disappearing as the shed came into view, looming phantom-like in the weak afternoon sun trying to shine its way through the leaden sky. Logic told him the house was still there with his mother inside, even though he couldn't see it. Yet Danny still felt very much alone and isolated. He stopped and stared at the shed. It was old, predating the mansion by at least 50 years. Even the construction was different. Older. The shed was made of logs, and a badly fitting door hung open as if inviting him to enter. A small utility trailer was parked on one side of the trail next to the shed. His father had instructed him to put the junk from the shed into the trailer. But just the smaller stuff, Danny, his father had told him. Don't try to lift the bigger stuff and hurt yourself. Alex and I will look after that later. He sighed sadly as he thought of his older brother and wished he had not gotten Alex into trouble. Danny would never admit it, but he idolized his brother. Alex was strong and smart, and when it came to soccer and hockey, he was the best. That's why it hurt so much when his hero ignored him, didn't want him around. Danny stood examining the shed, his hair soaked by the constant drizzle. He wore a raincoat, but it wasn't long before his jeans were soaked from his knees to the top of his boots. Alex wouldn't be afraid, Danny told himself, and that thought gave him sufficient courage to step inside the shed. It took a few seconds for his eyes to adjust to the gloom. The shed was windowless and had never been hooked up to electricity. Thus the open door provided the only light, and he could barely see as the weak daylight scarcely penetrated the darkness. He could make out what seemed to be a couple of large chests against one wall, and there was a shelf running the length of the wall opposite the door. He picked up a small box that was under the shelf and carried it out to the trailer. He returned to the shed and repeated the operation, removing a second container. He went back into the shed, and as he stooped to pick up another carton, a shadow flickered in the dim light. Danny quickly turned towards the door, thinking that maybe his father had returned, or perhaps his mother had come out to the shed. No one was there. He stepped to the entrance and looked outside. Nothing. Was it his imagination? His earlier courage evaporated, so he decided he would take out the last box and leave the rest for later. If his father wanted to ground him an extra month, he was okay with that. Anything was better than spending another minute in the shed. He had just picked up that last box when the door slammed shut behind him, plunging the shed into total darkness. Terror gripped him, and he could hear his heart hammering in his chest. In one corner, the darkness faded, a green glow spreading outwards into the shed. There was a buzzing noise, like a swarm of bees following a queen to a new hive. His fear intensified. He tried to run, but couldn't move his feet. Looking down, he saw that the plank floor was gone and was replaced by a bog, his feet mired in a glue-like muck. A figure appeared, a man, no, man-like but not human. It looked like a small tree, branches for arms and legs, not holes for eyes. Branch-like arms grabbed him around the waist, lifting him right out of his rubber boots. He kicked and screamed, but to no avail, his stocking feet connecting with nothing but air. He was being dragged into another room. His brain was telling him this was impossible, there was no other room in the shed. His senses told him otherwise, the impossible was happening. He screamed in terror and despair. Terror when he saw the table towards which the creature was dragging him, despair because he knew no one would hear his cries. As blackness engulfed him, he heard a voice cooing, "Boy, food, time to feed." Section 3. When Alex and his dad arrived home, his mother was waiting for them. "I just had a call from a client," she advised them, "I have to go to Charlottetown." She looked at Elliot and asked, "Don't you have a faculty meeting this evening?" Elliot slapped his forehead. "Damn, I forgot. We can go together and perhaps have dinner after our meetings." Miriam quickly agreed. A quiet dinner without two squabbling boys sounded like a great idea. She turned to Alex as he was getting out of the car and said, "There's a lasagna in the refrigerator. You can put it in the oven for dinner, and please don't fight with your brother." "I won't start anything," promised Alex. "By the way, where is the little toad, I mean fellow?" Alex corrected. "He's at the shed cleaning it out." Miriam glanced at her watch and frowned. "He's been gone almost half an hour. Please check on him, Alex, and remember, don't start anything." Alex managed to look hurt. "Mom, he's the one that starts things, not me." Miriam and Elliot exchanged worried looks, wondering what sort of chaos would greet them when they returned. His mother took the passenger seat Alex had just vacated and, with a plea not to burn the house down, his father backed the car out of the driveway and his parents headed for Charlottetown. Alex did a quick time appreciation. An hour each way plus meetings plus dinner, his parents would not be back for at least 5 hours. He could not see the shed, but thought just how much trouble could the maggot get into? He would check on his brother later. Right now he wanted to change into dry clothes and transfer the information from his tablet to the computer. 15 minutes later, he was staring at the computer screen, scrolling through the images he had downloaded from his tablet. He was trying to decide how to start writing his paper when something caught his eye. He went back to the last image and read it. Andrew Benning. January 5, 1954 to May 14, 1966. Today was May 14th. The unfortunate boy had died 50 years ago today. Help us! Those words flashed across the screen and Alex jerked away, blinking rapidly. What the hell was that? He wondered.
My imagination?
He watched the screen for a few seconds, but nothing changed. The image of Andrew Benning's tombstone was the only thing displayed. He shook his head, thinking it must have been a computer glitch or, God forbid, a virus. He quickly scanned through the images on his tablet and again went through the downloaded images. Nothing aside from the poignant images of his ancestors' headstones. Dismissing what he had seen as a fluke, he started to peruse the images again. It was during his fourth read-through that he found what his subconscious had detected at the cemetery. Three headstones were noteworthy. One was Andrew's, one was the marker for a young Charlotte Benning, and the other for another boy, Joseph Benning. However, it was the date that stood out. Charlotte Benning, April 2, 1905 to May 14, 1916. Joseph Benning, August 22, 1856 to May 14, 1866. Andrew, Charlotte, and Joseph had died on the same date 50 years apart. Coincidence? He needed more information, but with no internet he had no access to what he needed. He grabbed his cell phone and made a call, connecting with the next best thing to a databank of family information. His father. Alex knew that if anyone could provide missing information, it would be his history professor father. Alex! Is everything okay? Came Elliot's concerned voice over the phone. Everything's fine, Dad, said Alex reassuringly. I just wanted to ask you a quick question related to my project. Do any of these names mean anything to you? He quickly provided the names of the three Benning children, not mentioning the fact they were children and that all three died on the same date. Well, said Elliot after a minute, if I remember correctly, there were three orphan Charlottes. One of them was not actually a Benning but had married one of our second cousins. She was a Wilson or Williams before marrying into the family. There were also several Josephs, in fact your great uncle was a Joseph. I'd need to check my files, my memory's not like it used to be, he added with a chuckle. What about Andrew? Prompted Alex. His father paused before continuing, his voice laced with sadness. There was only one Andrew. He died quite young, a few years before I was born. His father and my father, your grandfather, were brothers. His family lived on the mainland, but came here to visit on a regular basis. I don't know the whole story, but apparently Andrew disappeared one night and was found dead the next morning. I think there are some old newspaper clippings in a box in the office, as it created a bit of a stir at that time. His father and my father never spoke about it, I think it was just too painful. Thanks, Dad, said Alex, ending the connection before his father started asking questions that Alex just didn't know how to answer. He went to his father's office, which was located on the second floor of the large house. Built in the mid-1800s, at a time when large families were the norm, their house had 8 bedrooms, one of which his father had converted into an office. It also meant that Alex and Danny had their own rooms, which to some extent contributed to peaceful cohabitation. Fortunately for Alex, his father was a methodical researcher, and therefore all his reference material was well organized. It only took him a couple of minutes to find the box containing the news articles his father had mentioned. He quickly reviewed the clippings, not sure what he was looking for. There was not a lot of information and nothing indicating how Andrew had died. An autopsy had been conducted, but no cause of death was determined, although there was no indication of foul play. The last article was a short piece about the funeral, a well-written article that captured the sense of loss the family was experiencing. It was the last three sentences in the article that caught Alex's attention. Young Andrew Benning will be lovingly remembered, but his family will continue to be haunted by the mystery of their beloved son's passing. The boy's body had been found in a shed on the family land, yet the shed had been searched several times that evening. How searchers had failed to find the boy remains unknown.
The shed. Danny.
As much as Danny annoyed him, the kid was his little brother and Alex didn't want him harmed, well, at least not by anyone other him. He sensed his brother was in danger. Alex charged down the stairs and out the back door, dashing for the shed. He saw the utility trailer and the boxes Danny had already placed in it. The door to the shed was closed and it wouldn't open, even when he threw all his weight against it. Alex felt a wrongness. It was an old door and didn't sit squarely in the frame, so it should have opened easily. Frantically, he looked for something to break down the door. At the front of the trailer there was a toolbox where Alex's father kept some odd tools. Alex rummaged through the box hoping to find a large mallet or maybe a crowbar. He found a hatchet. It would have to do. Screaming Danny's name, he attacked the door, chopping furiously at the wood and shouldering against it with all his might. The splintered wood finally gave way to his assault and Alex all but fell into the shed. In the dim light, he saw a pair of small rubber boots in the center of the floor, but no sign of Danny. Then a sound came to him, someone moaning. Holding his hands in front of him like a blind man, he slowly shuffled towards the sound that seemed to be coming from a dark corner. He reached the corner and was astonished when his hands continued to move through the wall, meeting no resistance.
Impossible!
Alex passed through a wall and found himself in another room, one that was lit with a pale greenish glow. His mouth went dry with fear and shock when he saw his brother tied spread-eagled on the table. A creature was standing over him. Danny's raincoat and shirt had been ripped open and a pulsating branch-like appendage extended from the creature to Danny's exposed chest. Whatever the thing was doing, it was hurting Danny because his brother was slowly twisting against the ropes, moaning.
"Danny!" screamed Alex.
The creature snapped up, aware of Alex for the first time. Danny managed to raise his head, looking at his big brother.
"Run, Alex!
Get away," he shouted. His head fell back onto the table as he emitted another groan. Alex didn't hesitate, didn't think. Screeching like a banshee, he leapt at the creature, swinging the hatchet. There was a sickening thud as the hatchet severed the repulsive tentacle that had attached itself to Danny's chest. The creature jerked away from Danny, emitting a howl of surprise and anger. The greenish glow intensified, and despite the unworldliness of the situation, it registered on Alex that there was a burn mark where the creature's appendage had been attached to his brother's body. The thing appeared to be confused, standing trance-like as if being interrupted while feeding was something it had never experienced. Taking advantage of the creature's immobility, Alex swung the hatchet again, this time at the ropes binding his brother to the table. He hacked at them, and when they parted, he pulled his brother unceremoniously off the table. He shoved Danny towards the wall, hoping that the opening, or whatever, was still there.
"Run, Danny," he shouted, "go."
Danny melted through the wall. Alex charged through after him and was relieved to find himself back in the shed, his brother staring up at him. "Keep going," ordered Alex, pushing Danny out the door. They ran along the path until they came to the curve in the trail and could see the house. There they stopped, gasping for breath. Neither boy could speak, not sure what to say, not certain what they had experienced. Alex rested his hands on his brother's shoulders and wheezed, "I think we're safe now." Danny gulped in air. He then looked past his brother towards the shed and his eyes widened in terror. He wanted to scream, but all he could do was to squeak, "Alex!" Alex turned and watched, terrified, as the creature materialized from the shed, lumbering purposely towards them. He turned back to his brother, and in a calm voice that belied his inner fear, he said, "Go, Danny. Run. Get away." "Buta," stammered Danny. "Go," commanded Alex forcibly. The only thing that mattered to Alex now was his brother's safety. Danny ran towards the house as Alex turned to face the abomination that was lurching towards him. He saw that the severed limb had regrown and a sinking feeling came over him. If that thing could regenerate, there was no way he could destroy it by hacking it to pieces. The best he could hope for was to slow it down enough to provide Danny a chance to escape. Alex instinctively understood that whatever the thing was, it was very old, much older than the house or the shed. It was something evil, something that had occupied this land long before humans had appeared. He also intuitively knew that this thing had killed the three youngsters whose names would be forever etched in his memory. His feeling of hopelessness evaporated, being replaced with anger. This evil monstrosity had hurt his brother and was responsible for the deaths of three young members of his family. Instead of fleeing, he charged. The entity swung an arm-like branch at him, but Alex managed to duck under it and felt great satisfaction when he sunk the hatchet into the wooden creature right between its knotty eyes. There was a howl from the creature and Alex knew he had hurt it. "I got more of that for you, you bastard," snarled Alex as he wrenched the hatchet free and swung again. He managed to get in another savage cut before two limbs wrapped around him and flung him away. He landed hard, the hatchet flying from his hand and the breath knocked out of him. Dazed, he made it to his feet. He couldn't see the hatchet and the thing was steadily approaching him. He knew he was finished, there was no hope. But he was not going to give up. He would attack the thing with his bare hands if necessary, delay it long enough to give Danny time to get away.
"Alex! Duck!" shouted a voice behind him.
Alex ducked just as something flew past his head. It hit the ground just in front of the hideous creature and shattered. Flame erupted and quickly spread over the creature. Alex watched, transfixed as flames from a splintered kerosene lamp engulfed the entity. Something black emerged from the flames, something with a diseased greenish glow. They heard it howling, "Enno! Enno!" Then it disintegrated, disappearing as if it never existed. "It's gone," said Alex, instinctively knowing the thing had been destroyed by the flames. All that remained was some burning wood.
"Alex, look," whispered Danny.
Alex looked over to where Danny was pointing and saw three small figures, two boys and a girl. He knew who they were. One of them, who Alex guessed was Andrew judging by the clothes the boy wore, smiled and waved, mouthing the words "thank you." The three youngsters turned and, holding hands, walked away, slowly disappearing in the mist.
"Who?"
Danny started to ask. "I'll explain it all later," replied Alex as he studied his brother. The kid was soaked through and was still in his stocking feet, standing in a muddy puddle of rainwater. Rivulets of water ran from his rain-drenched hair and down his chest. They were both shaking, and not just from the cold. Alex was relieved to notice that the burn mark on Danny's chest was fading. "That was good thinking with the kerosene lamp, squirt.
You've got a good arm," commended Alex.
Danny looked down at his wet feet, embarrassed by the unaccustomed praise from his older brother. "What are we going to tell Mom and Dad?" asked Danny, looking at the remains of the broken lamp and the ashes of the burnt creature. Alex thought for a moment, then silently said, "The truth." He smiled down at his brother.
"Come on. You're a mess. Let's get you cleaned up before Mom and Dad get home."
Section 4. The first reaction that Elliot and Miriam Benning felt when they returned home that night was relief. the house was still standing and there was no evidence of police or ambulances. The second thing they experienced was shock. They found the two boys talking quietly in the kitchen. Danny, dressed in pajamas and a housecoat, was sitting on Alex's lap leaning against his brother as the older boy was showing him something on a tablet. They were sipping hot chocolate and looked up and smiled at their parents. "Hi, Mom."
"Hi, Dad," greeted Alex.
"Ah, is everything okay?" asked their mother suspiciously. She glanced around quickly but saw no evidence of damage.
Danny nodded, "Yeah, we're fine, Mom."
He couldn't suppress a yawn.
"Come on, Squirt," said Alex, "time for bed."
Can I sleep in your room tonight?" asked Danny shyly. Alex was not surprised at the request. Neither of them would get over this day's experience for some time. He wouldn't admit it, but even he would welcome another person in the spare bed in his room.
"Sure," he said, tousling his brother's hair.
Alex noticed the bewildered looks on his parents' faces.
"Danny and I had a bit of a scare today," he said.
"We'll tell you all about it in the morning." Elliot and his wife merely nodded dumbly, unsure how to interpret what they were seeing. They watched their sons as the boys went upstairs. Alex, one arm draped over Danny's shoulder, said to him, "Tomorrow, I'll teach you some soccer moves."
"Promise?" asked Danny hopefully.
"Promise," affirmed Alex.
Miriam turned to Elliot as the boys disappeared and whispered, "Who are those two?"
"Ours."
"They look like ours," confirmed Elliot hesitantly. Miriam frowned and looked at her husband, "I wonder what happened?"
Elliot shrugged, "I don't know, but whatever it was, it can't be all bad. They actually seemed to like each other all of a sudden."
After a pause, he frowned, "I wonder how much progress Danny made cleaning out the shed. I forgot to ask."
"Does it matter?" asked Miriam.
"Just what do you plan to do with that shed anyway?"
"Burn it down," replied Elliot emphatically. "Our fire department is always looking for old buildings they can use for practice in putting out fires."
He glanced furtively up the stairs to make sure the boys couldn't hear him.
"You know, I never liked that building. Don't tell the boys, but the damn thing always spooked me."
The end, or is it?